I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, Texas public schools lost more than 76,000 students this school year. That number comes from a report from the nonpartisan think tank Texas 2036. This is in conflict with the fact that the state's population continues to grow, and the trend of fewer students is expected to get worse. The projection is that Texas could be seeing about 400,000 fewer public school students within 4 to 5 years. Meanwhile, there are fewer dollars for traditional public schools in the state. The response has been public school districts across the state are shutting down campuses. These closures of neighborhood schools has been a shock to communities. This will require rethinking of the approach to public education. What does the future of public education look like? How will these tectonic shifts impact the quality of education and access to high-quality learning for the next generation and today? That's what's coming up on The Source. But first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. At least 130 public school campuses in Texas have been closed or have been approved for closure. School districts say they had no choice but to shut down the schools because they are facing a shrinking student population and tightening budgets. More closures are expected as fewer students are showing up for enrollment. The consequences could reshape communities across the state. When students leave, state funding follows them. That can mean tighter budgets and teacher cuts, and in many communities, the closure of neighborhood schools, which have long served as anchors of local identity and pride, can be devastating. So what happens when fewer students show up at traditional public schoolhouse? And what does the future of public education in Texas look like, especially that we're seeing that public enrollment and school dollars continue to move elsewhere? You can call in and join the conversation, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Have you dealt with your local public school having to shut or they're planning to shut it down? What was that like for you? Give us a call, 833-877-8255. And to help us understand the challenges of public education in this new world, we're joined by Diana Lambert. She is the executive director of Futuro San Antonio. And Diana, welcome to The Source.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Also with us is Chandra Kring Villanueva. She is the director of budget and policy at Every Texan. And Chandra, welcome. It's good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us is Lawrence Scott, PhD, professor at the College of Education and Human Development at Texas A&M University here in San Antonio. Lawrence, it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
So Texas, the fact that we're having fewer students, we hear all the time that Texas is a fast-growing state. So how surprising is it, Chandra, we're seeing public education enrollment now falling?
I think first we really need to just sort of understand how the school finance system works. So basically, school finance is a really complex formula that determines how much school districts get. And the first thing we do is we count all of our students and they get a base level of funding. And then we make adjustments based on student populations and also district characteristics to figure out what a school is entitled to. And the problems that we're seeing with the budgetary parts that's leading to a lot of these school closures is that that basic allotment, the base level funding, is completely arbitrary and it hasn't been adjusted since 2019. So we have a really arbitrary system, and we also fund based on attendance rather than enrollment. So when enrollment drops, attendance also drops and schools are getting less money. So it is an issue when you fund your schools based on students that if the student population does drop, schools will get less money. But the real issue is that the state hasn't been investing in our schools and that we don't have enough money to run the system because of decisions made at the state level.
But Chandra, we hear from Texas Governor Greg Abbott that Texas is spending more money on public education than ever before.
That's if you don't adjust for inflation. And the state share has increased because we've been reducing local property tax collections. Again, this is a really complex system. So in 2019, we started a thing called compression, where when property values raise across the state takes on a greater share of the taxes and reduces the local tax rate. So the state might be putting in more money than they've ever put in before, but that's not when you adjust it for inflation and look at what our per student spending amount. Then it's about, we're actually spending about $2,000 less per student than we were before the pandemic.
Daniel Lambert, tell me about how school districts are choosing to shut down schools. What is the process? How do they get to that point?
Yeah, so especially in our city, we have to consider the many factors that go behind getting to that position of having to close a school. I think there are factors such as low birth rates, gentrification, families having to move outside of the 410 loop, and also thinking about academic performance. I think more and more school districts are facing pressure to deliver on academic results, and they have to, you know, make choices. Do I get perhaps taken over by the state, or do I choose to close a school that has been failing for many years? And I think that that is adding pressure to an already exhausted system. As Chandra was saying, they're not getting the funding that they need, that they merit. And, you know, for us, we've been seeing districts getting to that decision sometimes precipitated. We really want to, as an organization that is doing advocacy work, connecting with families, we're hopeful that districts can take more time to actually connect with families in advance of those decisions, making sure that there's plenty of time for families to share what they're thinking, how those decisions should be made, and then to make sure that there is a plan so that families have access to the best quality options in their neighborhood, that there's access to transportation and other services that may allow them to still have a good option nearby their homes. But of course, as an advocacy organization that is connecting with families all the time, we want to see more family voice at the table.
Lauren Scott, simultaneously, we're seeing an exodus of mainly mid-career school teachers. They're abandoning the field. Is this connected to this problem?
Absolutely. We see this exacerbating the problem. Charles Buff Foundation does a comprehensive study every year that they put out, and it talks about teacher retention. And over 90% of the teachers said that they want to be paid more. Well, that's one thing. But then secondly, when you consolidate schools, you're looking at larger classroom sizes. Then a lot of districts are opting for district of innovation, which means that you can have teachers that are not credentialed or certified. So what happens is you put your teachers who have been there 3, 5, 10 years in positions to mentor maybe half the school. And then that, again, exacerbates the problem when you have larger class sizes. You have teachers that can't just focus on their particular position, but they're also having to mentor uncertified teachers. And then we haven't even talked about the discipline issue as well when you're talking about larger class sizes.
Yeah, so losing mid-career teachers, these are experienced teachers, sometimes master teachers. They've gone through the education system to become teachers. And then they say, I can't do this anymore. I can't work a second job while also being a teacher and grading papers and dealing with all the stressors that come with being a teacher, dealing with troublesome individuals at times. Mm-hmm. And so we bring in these uncertified individuals to become teachers. And I'm really not clear on how uncertified an uncertified teacher is. Was he a truck driver yesterday and he's a teacher today?
Right. You have alternative certification programs. You have post-baccalaureate programs essentially giving you a year to get certified. So, for instance,
I see billboards that say, become a teacher, call the
in 18 months, right? And there's two parts of becoming a teacher, right? There's content mastery, but then there's also what they call pedagogical content, meaning how to teach. We're going to teach you what to teach, but then also how to teach. And that it's a little bit of art and skill.
It's hard.
Yes, it's very hard. I would tell anybody, go to any seventh grade classroom and find out what teachers are going through every day.
All right, so we're taking a break here. We're going to continue our conversation. The focus is on schools being shut down, you know, neighborhood schools. They have to, the school district says, we can't keep the school open anymore. We got to shut it down. How did that happen? Why do they decide that school district? What impact does it have on the community and the students? There is some data that shows that the students do not do well when that happens to them. What can we learn from that? How can we adjust? What resources can be put in order to help those students? And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. This is a 1 minute break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're having a community conversation about why schools are being shut down. Why are they shuttering? School district, the ISD, the board members, they have to make tough decisions to balance the budgets, and they say it doesn't make sense to keep this school open any longer. But why do they choose that school, and what are the long-term impacts? Can things be done in order to help the students who were told, like, you can't go here anymore with your friends, and now you have to go to this different school? And we've seen the data shows that those students don't always do very well. What can be done? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If this has happened to you in your neighborhood, we definitely want to hear your story. Let's go to a caller. We have Rosalyn. And Rosalyn, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Rosalie. I was just wondering for Diana, what is her message to a family right now whose child's school might be on the closure list? And what should they be asking their district? And what should they be looking for in their next option?
All right, Rosalie, thank you for that call. We appreciate it. And so, Diana?
Yes, thanks for your question, Rosalie. And if you're a family out there that you have experienced a school closure, I would ask you to do your research, do your homework, think about what's the best fit for your child when it comes to the next school opportunity. Think about perhaps the school model you might want your child to be a part of. You can look also at the Texas Education Agency website or even the School Discovery Network, which is a local nonprofit that you can look at around different options across the city. And pick the best choice for your kid. I would also ask you to go tour the school, connect with the teachers, ask questions about, you know, the school culture, the program, academic performance, extracurriculars, other things that you might care about. And then also, if your child is of age, include your student. I think it's wonderful when we get student perspective and student voice in such critical decisions as a family.
It's also impacting charter schools. We're seeing a lot of charter schools being closed as well. I think when there was the charter school boom, and when those things first were allowed to happen, and a lot of them were kind of fly-by-night operations, and there's still some of them out there like that. So, I mean, how should people check out to make sure my neighborhood's public school shut down, I have a neighborhood charter school? Is that going to be a one-for-one fit, Diana?
Yeah, I mean, for us at Futuro, we care a lot about values of access, equity, and accountability. So no matter if you're a public charter school, a public ISD in 1882, those are all types of public school options in our city. I would challenge families to look at academic performance, to have interviews with administrators, teachers, to find that right best fit. And ultimately, you know, we also have to trust families, right? Even for us as an organization, we have some of our parent leaders that have one of their kids at an ISD school, one children at a public charter school, and they're just finding what's the best fit according to what their children need, and make sure that we have those diversity of options in our city. I think it can be a strength for us to have as a city. As long as we're serving all students and we're delivering on results, I think we're on our way to making sure that we have preparation for our kids and for the next generation.
Chandra Kring Vinweva at Every Texan, Director of Budget and Policy. Why is this happening? What has changed in the world that we start with? Because this is not just happening here in San Antonio. It's not just happening across the state. It is happening across the state, but it's been happening across the country. And as a matter of fact, it's been happening there for longer than it has been happening here. So why is that?
A lot of it has to do with funding, and how schools are funded across the nation is usually based on property values. We're seeing kids leave. The pandemic took a huge hit, I think, on student enrollment, especially those really early years. In Texas in particular, when you looked at the drop in enrollment during the pandemic years, it was primarily in pre-K and kindergarten, the groups that are hardest to teach in a virtual setting. And a lot of those families never rejoined the school community. And so I think that this, you know, there's been some shifts around how schools are being run and treated in Texas. I'm not, you know, as familiar with what's going on in other states. But since the pandemic, we have not been keeping up with inflation for funding. Our teachers are not getting paid good salaries. We're seeing a lot of teachers leave the profession, as we've talked about already. And we're funding our students at $2,000 less per student than we were pre-pandemic. So it's not surprising that families are looking for other opportunities or things that meet their needs. And, you know, we talked a little bit about charter schools, too. And they're the ones that are also causing some of these enrollment declines within the public schools. Because when you set up a charter school, you start siphoning off kids. And then the traditional ISD has an underutilized building or campus, which oftentimes leads to a closure. So we have all of these different kind of things working in tangent together that are causing a lot of the problems that we're seeing today. But I think the number one issue is the fact that our funding for our schools is completely arbitrary. It's not based on anything. There's no science, math, thought at all.
So they never went in and said, okay, let's design a school, the state lawmakers, and saying to figure out what would be the appropriate amount of dollars to assign to this. They've never really done the paperwork of figuring out, put a pencil to the paper. Instead, they've just come up with a dollar figure is based on what would be politically convenient.
They did do that in 1984 as a part of the Perot commissions that created our school finance system. And even at the time, the legislature funded it at about 73% to 76% of what the commission recommended. So we've been shortchanging our schools since the day we created our school finance system.
So Lauren Scott, Texas A&M University, San Antonio, the College of Education and Human Development. The students, did they just go home for COVID and not come back, or how did that work out? I mean, are they not going to school, or are they going virtually to school? What kind of education are they getting?
Right. It's not going to be the same because you're missing a socialization component. What happened during the pandemic traditionally, teachers, and I'm married to a teacher as well, and I've been a teacher. Teachers who were used to that face-to-face engagement interaction didn't get that. And so students would turn their cameras off, or they would be disengaged or not show up altogether. So you do that for a year, they come back. They've lost the engagement face-to-face. The mental health aspect has also been diminished as well. And then the socialization aspect. So students, one, didn't come back, or when they did come back, they didn't come back the same. And I think that's what teachers were feeling, and then that's what parents may have felt. Either they said the school system, as it were, is not working, traditional school system is not working, therefore I'll opt for homeschooling.
Or are they really getting homeschooling?
Well, they have micro schools and homeschool networks, but it's not the same as your regular
Are they getting an education? I mean, I know there are some really good homeschooling, mm-hmm. Operations that are happening, but I'm hearing that there are kids that they're getting an education, and the price is right.
Well, it depends how you define education, and we have to ask ourselves, what kind of world do we want to live in the next 10, 20 years? Horace Mann says education is the great equalizer. Well, if you're living in a silo, and you're getting an education in the silo, you're not equipped to handle, live, and lead in a very multicultural, diverse atmosphere in the workplace.
So, Diana, shouldn't we have done something to try to bring those students back into the classroom? And it made them feel comfortable? Or was that a missed opportunity?
I think it's still a missed opportunity even today. We are actually, as an organization, we care a lot about hearing from families, what they want, what they see. We recently conducted a poll in which we asked close to 500 San Antonians what they care about the most when they're shopping for a school, when they're looking for an environment, what are some of the the top things that they look for. And they look for these top three things: a safe environment, a building that is up to par, a safe a classroom, a safe culture. They also are looking for qualified teachers that can deliver great on instruction, and they're looking for strong academic results. And I think when families are not getting what they need, they go somewhere else. So this is, you know, for me, a challenge for us to think about how can we think about delivering on quality no matter which system, so we have great options within the public school system. And another point I wanted to make is around a research study that City Education Partners did last fall, in which they were able to uncover bright spots. Schools within San Antonio, within SAISD, and some of our low-performing districts, quote-unquote, that even though they may be serving a high amount of low-income students, they're still performing. They're still performing under, you know, the same funding that the schools are getting that right now is inadequate. So I think when we have conversations around education, what's needed, of course, more money would be super nice. However, having the right leaders, the right culture, the right teachers can make or break a campus. And we got to be delivering on those things every day for kids.
Well, Lauren Scott, when a student doesn't go back to school after the pandemic, they go and they're doing homeschooling, but maybe they're not really getting a lot of academic rigor in that environment. And then eventually they go to high school or don't, or they continue this way and then eventually maybe try to go get some higher education, and then they realized they're not capable. I mean, I've seen a lot of things online of young people trying to go and perform at that college level, and they can't.
Right. And we've seen this over and over, longitudinal studies, to where students, when they can't adapt, and that adaptability and that engagement with a very diverse group doesn't happen, which normally happens. The socialization part, the social-emotional part, happens while you're in the regular K-12 system.
And that's a skill that employers are looking for.
Soft skills, yes,
the
sir.
The soft skills, being able to work with others, being able to take direction and criticism and all sorts of abilities that we need employees to be able to have.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a study, Gene Annion, the hidden curricula, that talks about that exactly, where, you know, your CEO schools that were more elite had the collaboration. It had, you know, students working not in a silo, and they were working in collaboration with others, and they were being creative. And I think that's what happens when you're in a regular school system, is you're able to hear diverse perspectives and you're able to create solutions collaboratively. I just wanted to parenthetically mention that also City Education Partners, that study, it's funny, I had that in my notes as well, those bright spots. If you have a chance, I just want to re-emphasize the Salado Creek Irvin Dual Language Idea, Judson College, Somerset. That report, and we actually use that report in my classes, is very comprehensive and very telling on how you can create those solutions right there in your school, no matter the neighborhood.
Chandra Kring Vinueva at Every Texan, how is this looking across the state of Texas?
It's bleak. We're seeing school closures across the state, and it's really a crisis that was manufactured by the legislature. They know that they're not putting in enough funding for our schools to operate. We've created charter schools that are siphoning off money from traditional public schools, creating two inefficient systems. I don't have value judgments against charter schools. Some are good, some are bad. But when you look at it from a finance perspective, it's inefficient to have a second tier of public schools that siphon off and create inefficiencies and underutilized buildings. So there is a lot of financial concerns with that and how they're funded, being 100% state funded without having a local tax base. So things have been just really dire across the entire state.
So rural and urban?
Rural and urban, yes. It's happening everywhere. And again, it's not necessarily because of enrollment decline everywhere. It's because we don't have enough money per student to operate our schools.
And that's a choice.
And that's a choice made by the legislature.
All right, we're taking another break. Our phone lines are open. I really want to hear from our San Antonio listeners about what they went through when their local school was slated for being shut down by the ISD. It's happened quite a bit here. We've seen a lot of protests, a lot of angry parents, students who were just felt like they were being abandoned. And there's long-term consequences for that. So we really want to get the community involved in the conversation. Call in 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this break.
Support for TPR comes from UT San Antonio, offering degree programs and research focused on workforce development, student success, and health innovation across Texas. UTSA.edu. UT San Antonio, the University of Ambition.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, talking about how schools are being shut down. School districts just can't afford to keep them open any longer. They have fewer students. That's a problem. But also budgets are getting tighter, and we have fewer qualified teachers as well. It does seem like our public school system is under attack in multiple ways. What can be done about that? And what's happening to the students? We've got to keep our eyes on the ball here. It's all about providing a quality education to the next generation. And are we failing in doing that by dealing with these concerns? You give us a call. The number is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Kia. Kia, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Thank you. I'm actually an educator here in San Antonio that has entered the homeschooling realm. And I think that is an area where we have underestimated our parents' ability. I think a key point is that if parents are driven away from public schools, it's not just funding, it's just what is provided to parents and feeling like what they're getting is not enough for their children to get ahead in this current climate. And so parents are creating their own resources. You can even see this in the number of students who are doing dual enrollment at our Alamo colleges has gone up, who come from homeschool. So they are being educated. They're able to get that socialization, but still feeling like they're coming ahead and they're really meeting their children's academic needs. And I think in this conversation, we don't want to undervalue what homeschooling can bring to the table, but instead strategize how to meet all the needs. And I think one of your talked about that we really want a right fit for every kid. We need to include all the options, and then we need to move forward. Because I do think that if we try to stick to the traditional model, we're staying in the past, and we really need to look at the future.
So tell me about how you provide a service for homeschools.
And so currently I'm affiliated with a homeschool group called For the Culture Homeschool, and we really advocate for school are for resources and education that reflects the students culturally, their interests, and engages them, meets their need. And so that is like pointing them in the right direction of really high quality curriculum that can be implemented from a homeschool setting, getting them involved in cooperative learning. So where parents are sharing the load, but also sharing their expertise. So if I'm teaching math, I'm an accountant, and I have a math degree, right? And maybe I have someone who has a science degree. But pooling those resources to provide the socialization, but also the education at a higher quality in safe and consistent environments. And I think that that's kind of meeting the needs across the table.
And you're dealing with highly engaged parents?
Yes. And I think that in any, in any educational structure, you're just going to have your low engaged parents and your high engaged parents. And I do recognize that every parent is not homeschooling at the same level, but we also know every parent is not engaging in the system at the same level. So, what you have to do is say, how can we improve whatever system it is, but also how do we change with the times to be responsive?
All right, Kia, thank you so much for calling. You gave us a lot of great information. I appreciate your points and your work as well. Thank you. But I want to, work off that. And so you have highly engaged parents who are putting in the resources, making sure that their homeschool students are getting a good education. But you wonder, is that, what percentage of students who are homeschooled are getting that? And also when you have this kind of lifeboat mentality of like, well, the schools are no longer working for me, I'm going to pull mine out. And as you do that, you're kind of contributing to the erosion of the overall public good of having a public school system, you're having a population of students who are having fewer resources. And overall, if you look at this society overall, there's a degradation of quality. And so I wanted to hear from Chandra Kring Villanueva from Every Texan about that.
Yeah. You know, I think she kind of made some good points. But from a historical perspective, we tried micro schools after the Civil War when we really struggled to establish public education. And it made it harder for the state to establish a strong public education system. And so when I see these debates about micro schools, I feel like we're going into the past and not into the future. And the reality is that every student, every kid in Texas is guaranteed by our Constitution a free public education. And our public schools have to take every single child, no matter what. So it's important that we all advocate and make sure that our schools have the resources that they need. Anytime I hear a parent talk about that they left because their students weren't being served, what I hear is that they're arguing for better funded and better resourced public education. And the only way we're going to get there is if all parents stay in the public education system and push for the state to make the investments that our kids deserve.
And so let me ask you, Lawrence Scott, Texas A&M University College of Education and Human Development. If you have a high percentage of highly involved parents pulling their kids out of this public education, traditional public school, and then you're basically kind of leaving behind a higher percentage of parents who are not so engaged, and they really see the public school system as a place just to drop your kids off in the morning and pick them up in the afternoon, mm-hmm. then you're kind of devolving the whole system, aren't you?
Well, maybe this is a utilitarianistic perspective, but I look for the greater good for the greatest number of people, right? For a community. We are a community. And I think that if we're talking to Sandra's point, if we're talking about building a world, a community that is more collaborative, that is more collegial, that is more cooperative, we have to look at, you know, how are we going to do that? So schools have community identity. That's why when they were going to close Sam Houston in the early 2000s, the whole community rallied because they said, Sam Houston, we don't have another high school for another 10 miles on the east side in District 2. So we can't close Sam Houston. And now, look, everybody knows the Sam Houston band, right? You've seen the Sam Houston band. Or when Julian Castro did the DNC speech, you saw everybody, especially Jefferson High School, getting excited because everybody, you know, or when Steele High School wins the state, or Justin wins state, the whole community rallies, kind of like we do with the Spurs, right? So that's what, you know, there's an identity, a community identity that's involved in a school. And when we take away the school, we take away the identity. And to that point, I just want to parenthetically say, homeschooling, no indictment. I understand that's great for some parents, but we're talking about the greater good. TEA, Texas Education Agency, has standards in which, teachers have to be a part and teach. SBEC, our certification boards, accreditation boards, there's standards on how to teach and what to teach. And I think that when we're teaching in silos, we sometimes can rob kids of the opportunity to have the standardization. So when we see each other in college, we can have conversations, critical conversations, with the same data and the same information.
I want to get to another caller, Jennifer, but first I want to go to Deanna Lamberts to get your reaction.
Yes. First of all, what I want to name is that what the caller was saying doesn't surprise me. In our polling, what we found out was that only 9% of San Antonians believe that schooling right now is reflecting their values and their priorities. And there's a lot of distrust. And I think also the pandemic has opened up the doors, kind of seeing what happens behind the scenes. And for a lot of families, they have felt like we could do this at home too. For sure, I am a former public school teacher. My mom was a public school educator, grandma as well. I believe in public education. I believe in us improving that system. However, for someone that like me, I'm an immigrant. We have one shot at making it through the K-12 public school system. And for those parents, that level and that value of urgency for their kids right now at this moment is not something that we can argue against, right? If they feel like their kids, we've been meeting with families in the community that they've decided to pull their kids out because of the level of mental health issues that it was causing for the child to go to school every day. And I think it's
because
a nuance. What?
Because of the bullying?
Bullying, et cetera. And I think it's a nuanced conversation. I think for me, I definitely want to think about ways that we can improve what we deliver as public schools. And we are an organization that we respect family agency, and we think that families need to do what's best for their own kid.
Right, but also we need someone to thinking about what's best for the overall of society.
Absolutely.
And so when people are deciding that they're all going to opt out, and then because of that, we have this problem of closing of local public schools, then the entire community suffers because so many people are making their individual decisions. So that's why some people are actively talking about the collapse of the public school system, because we have this opt-out, I want to get what's best for me mentality. And yes, it's so there's a puzzle to be solved here.
And what I would name there too is that I've been seeing over the last couple of years, especially ISDs coming to the table trying to solve that puzzle, right? We see it right now. Northeast Side just became an open enrollment district, Northside as well, providing free pre-K education, doing a virtual high school. So trying to provide different models within the ISD umbrellas to serve the need, ultimately, of the families in their own school districts, and also to attract, right? Because a lot of what we're seeing in San Antonio with 17 ISDs, we also have charter schools in the public system too, is that option doesn't go one way. Families are choosing they're not just going from an ISD to a charter school. Oftentimes you see families going from an ISD to another ISD. Just last year, Northside had about 1,000 other students go into SAISD. So I think the system is getting more complex and nuanced, and we have to account for that.
All right, taking another break. We got two callers, got to get you on the air, Jennifer and Vince. And if you want to call in, talk about your experiences with the closing of your local public school, love to hear your story. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Source will continue after this quick break.
The largest sports tournament in the world is about to arrive in Texas, the 2026 FIFA World Cup.
Teams from across the globe are set to play at Dallas Stadium and Houston Stadium in June.
Whether you're a diehard fan or just a little soccer curious, we've got you covered.
When the World Comes to Texas is a new podcast from KERA News.
We'll talk to the people holding down the sport and the culture here in Texas.
It's out now. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the closure of your local public school, the elementary school that my kids could have walked to with their parents every morning. Instead, school districts are having to say, we can't afford to keep that school open. We're having to consolidate. There's lots of reasons for that. There's fewer schools. There's fewer dollars. All sorts of pressures on the ISD. How is that impacting families and communities and the students' education? You can call in 833-877-8255. Let's go to Jennifer. Jennifer, thank you for holding on so long. I appreciate that. And you're on the air.
Oh, thank you. So it happens that the church that I attend, we rent out our facility, the classrooms, to a charter school. And the charter school has, you know, high-performing students. And I begin to wonder what happens when there is a student that misbehaves. So they get to kick people out. They're not like public schools where I went to, where they have to deal with all students. So that's part of the reason why, students in this charter school are so well educated. And it made me think about the paddle. My dad taught in SAISD for 38 years. When he passed away, his paddle went to my storage area in the garage, and I still keep it. Back in the day, discipline, you know, was a deal. You had to behave yourself, and that was true in my elementary school, junior, and high school. may be part of the problem, since safety was the number one issue.
Jennifer, thank you for your question. We can't really talk about corporal punishment because that'll be another hour talking about that. And we've all got stories to tell. But I want to go quickly into Chandra about if you could talk about how charter schools are able to self-select and what does that mean?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways that charter schools do what we kind of call cherry picking, where they're able to really pick the students and not accept everyone. They are allowed to not accept any students that have disciplinary records, expel students or push them out if they do run into disciplinary issues. Some charter schools do not provide transportation, leaving it completely up to the parent. Some don't participate in the free and reduced lunch program, so that parents have to pay the full cost of school meals, regardless of their income. Some schools even have volunteer requirements and other things like that. So they put enough barriers in place that only your most highly motivated parents.
What about special needs or even a kid who's got ADHD and, you know, and they're not, you know, they're your model good student, but they have a future if they get some help.
Yeah, they're supposed to take kids with special education needs, but sometimes they just claim that they don't have the resources or the staffing to cover the level of services the student needs. And I've also heard parents testify at public education hearings at the capitals that they've been offered monetary support, I guess, or bribes, maybe you could call it, to leave a charter school and go back to a traditional ISD because of the disputes that they've had around not getting the special education services that they're entitled to.
Let's go to Vince on the phone. Vince, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir, you're on
my
the air.
My question, I wanted to make a statement and have Chandra see where she feels on this. This all to me goes to the financing as well. These schools, when they first started in Texas, there was only a handful. Now there's over 250 charters that can be in Texas. Where does the money come from to build these? I understand a school gets attached to an investor, and that investor gets paid back by tax fund entities. When I fight my appraisal, the last 3 years, you only have a certain amount of time, and towards the end of the time, I always say this. I say, you know, on the line item of the taxes that I'm being charged, it's the county, the city, the hospital, and the school district that I'm assigned. Where is my line item that shows me how much I'm paying for the charter? And they never, ever answer me. All 3 years in a row, they never answer me. And they stop right there. They look at each other like, what do we do? And they say, well, how much do you think your house is worth? I say, well, I think I wrote it down. And I always get that value. So okay. When they're funding this in a way that we don't really understand, and then when they take money away from public schools, what's the alternative? We have unregulated schools, and now they can segregate or whatever else they want to do with whatever they're planning to do with this system. I don't know.
Okay. Vince, Chandra, if you could talk about how charter schools are financed.
Yeah. Again, everything in school finance is really complicated, so I'll try to keep it high level.
But they are the public school dollars.
It is public dollars. So they're 100% state funded, and they get a lot of statewide averages of what traditional ISDs do. But the legislature has sort of been, in a backhanded way, using property tax dollars to fund charter schools, because charter schools siphon kids away from public schools, which increases recapture for recapture districts, and then they use that money to pay for charters. And so for a long time, the amount of money that we were collecting in recapture statewide was almost identical to what we were paying for charter schools. And Houston is actually a really good example of this. When they went into recapture, if all of the kids in charter schools were in Houston ISD, they would have gotten twice as much money from the state as they had to pay in recapture. So there's this really big connection around.
You've kind of lost me here.
Yeah, I know. It's so, so complicated.
But the bottom line is that charter schools, when I pay my public school tax, property taxes, they're getting some of that.
They're definitely getting some of that. Yeah.
Okay.
It's,
all right.
And the legislature,
but they don't have the accountability.
They don't have elected school boards. And ultimately, they
but
don't
they're getting
have to
public
take every
dollars,
kid.
But without any public oversight?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So let's go to, I'm going to see and get your reaction to all this, Deanna, because I know you're really, you know a lot about this.
Yes, absolutely. No. We are in a city that 26% of students attend a charter school, whether that might be an in-district or an open enrollment. Families are choosing with their feet. And that is, in our opinion, the most ultimate way to think about accountability, right? Families are determining the schools that are working for them versus the schools that are not. Charter schools are public, open to all. Private charter schools are not allowed in the state of Texas. They also do serve special education students. A lot of the parents we work with have special education students in public charter schools. They're roughly, when you look at the numbers in Bexar County, roughly ISD served about 17%, special education students, charter schools about 14%. So roughly the same when it comes to special education students, English language learners, homeless students, the percentages are roughly the same. One thing we need to think about, I think in our opinion, we have to evolve past this conversation. The charter schools are here to stay. They're part of the community. Families are choosing those options. And, you know, the enrollment has actually have gone up over the last few years on charter schools. And we are seeing some, you know, declines, obviously, on the ISD side. They are another form of public school.
But we're talking about the closure of your local traditional public school. And so you do have to say that the establishment of a thriving charter school system has something to do with that. And whether or not that was a good trade,
sure,
is up for discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say it is part, it's another part of the public school system that's available to families because they are free, public, and open to all. And we have to think about other factors that are contributing not only to closures of ISDs, but also right. to closures of charter schools too, such as gentrification, low birth rates, all of the other factors that I think are providing a crisis in our city too.
I'm going to try and get one more caller in before we're out of time. Mary Bell, you're on the air.
Okay. Hey, y'all. Lots of great things. Thank you for having me. And this is such a rich conversation for our families and students in San Antonio. And I serve a lot of parents in the work that I do, parents that have children with disabilities. And I think one of the biggest concerns that I see is that everybody's trying to make it right and better for our students that have multiple needs. But nobody is really getting it right. And I think this opportunity with schools closing and other schools coming in into our city, it's the perfect combination of innovation and community to be able to be building these schools in conjunction with these authorities, right? Whoever's deciding to make the schools. I think if we really want to give schools to students and families that need it, families have to be at the center of that conversation and not as an afterthought, not as a information session. But I think we should be thinking, what are the opportunities that families can actually be doing to develop these schools, to really create schools that are encompassing their needs? And I think that that's one of the things that I see in all aspects of our mm-hmm. public traditional schools and charter schools is that we do cherry pick our kids. There isn't right. enough services for all our students. And I think that's one of the issues that I'm seeing when I talk to the parents in San Antonio.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. We're almost completely out of time. I want to go to Lauren Scott really quickly. I mean, the criticism and the weakness of the public school system is that it was all one size fits for all. But then that's also a strength for society because we had this common touchstone and creation of this common fabric. What's the future look like?
Well, the future looks like we have to stop competing and be more collaborative in our approach. We have to figure out how we can be innovative. And to the caller's point and many of the caller's points, we have to figure out how are we all going to come together and not jump off a boat, but repair this boat. We are in this together.
Lauren Scott, PhD, professor at the College of Education and Human Development, Texas A&M University, San Antonio. Chandra Kring Vinuelva, the Every Texan Director of Budget and Policy and Deanna Lambert is the Executive Director of Futuro San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.